Welcome back to another exciting episode of Goth Girl Horror, the Hack Slash Podcast. Tonight on the show with us, we're not covering an issue of the comic book, sort of. We'll get to that. But we have a distinguished guest on the show with us to talk a little bit about her career. And she was involved in Hack Slash like 5 years ago. This is the 20th anniversary of Hack Slash, of course. And 5 years ago, she was the cover model for the 15th anniversary special of Hack Slash. Please introduce yourself to the audience.
Hi, I'm Sushi Savat.
Model, cosplayer, extraordinaire.
Scream queen.
What's your acting credits in? I, there was one thing I didn't actually get a chance to look up is what acting have you done? Because I know you mostly just from your spectacular modeling all over Twitter or X.
X, yeah. Well, thank you. My IMDb is actually credited Sushi Savat Holder.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And I'm mostly in indie horror. I've played a lot with Gator Blade, Sleazebox, there's Grim Reaper Films, there's a bunch.
The Cheerleader Sleepover Slaughter, which sounds really interesting, right up the alley of like Hack Slash, Helveria on the Run, Swamp Woman, Helvira, The House That Eats Flesh, The House Itself Eats Flesh, I guess, Satan Lives, The Rise of the Illuminati Hotties. Sushi's Sex Seance. That is quite the title. Taste Me, Death Escort Service Part 3. Death Escort Service Part 2 as well, The Naked Dud. These all sound like ludicrous titles for movies, and they all sound fantastic.
They are. I think that's the most fun about indie horror is just the titles are incredible as well.
If you get a title for a movie that's just like Fools Fall in Love, would you just, like, reject it completely and be like, that doesn't have any sex and nudity and violence in it?
I'd have to think long and hard, yes.
It's like you need something that says Bratty Foot Girls or Sammy Slick Vampire Slayer on the title. Otherwise, you're just like, what is this? Star Wars.
You take away my fun job and not make it fun. I'm not really having any fun, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically. Of course, then later on, your agent's like, so you turned down Star Wars. You're like, oh, that was real? Yeah, it's going to be on Disney Plus, a lot of exposure. You're really into playing some kind of like nude thing. So there's like these things called Twi'leks, and they're kind of slave girls. You could have had a lot of exposure, but you turned it down, and now it went to Taylor Swift or something.
So far, I haven't had any regrets.
Okay.
I also don't turn down that much.
So. That's good. You need to pay that rent somehow.
Exactly.
What
kind of beg me for what I will act on, so they reach out when something's available like that.
Okay, so what's something you won't do in these kind of films? Do you have like stipulations of like what you will and won't do when these kind of like, you know, these are like trauma films almost in a way, kind of.
Like trauma?
Trauma, yes.
Because trauma would be something different.
Trauma would be something different, yes. The first time I ever heard trauma films, it was this girl that I really wanted to date, and she was like, you've never seen trauma films? And I swear, I thought she said trauma films, but she probably said trauma. And I was like, yes, I have. And I'm thinking like, what's the video series where they watch people die? There's a movie coming out soon. Faces of Death.
That's not trauma.
No, it's not.
That's trauma.
Right. I thought that's what she meant. I was like, yeah, I've seen Faces of Death, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, yada, yada, yada. And she's like, no. I know what those are. No. Let me show you. And we watched some robot film, and then we watched, I think it was Kabuki Man, Police Officer. Whatever. That was my first exposure to it. I was like 19 years old.
Mine was Romeo and Juliet.
What's funny is I just had, so I'm writing this book about comic book store owners, and the owner of this store in Maine, his band did the music for Poltergeist.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's awesome. And he's done the music for two other Lloyd Kaufman films as well. I thought that was incredible. Where did this entire love of like horror and all this like stuff come from? Where did your warped sensibility start?
Probably just being a weird teenager. I grew up in Japan, so like the macabre and stuff was just in every comic book. We got like things were not PG-13 and everything was in your face. And then I moved to the United States and it had to be like very underground, so I sought it out just to feel some like normalcy. And it just kept developing into my adulthood. I never grew up, I guess.
How did you become aware of Hackslash?
Oh, so I even told Tim this. I was at a sex shop.
Oh, my.
And they had, like, a book section. Yeah, they had a book section, and that's where I found his comics.
The sex shop was carrying Hackslash?
Yeah, they were carrying, like, a lot of indie horror comics, indie sex comics, just, like, anything independent was in this little book area. It used to be, like, a two-story giant sex store. Actually, it was three stories, but they shut it down, and now they're, like, tiny little boutiques. But back in the day, it was a pretty cool place to hang out when you're 18.
So the sex store is not in business anymore?
They're in business. They're just like little boutiques now. It's not this giant, colossal sex store with like anything and everything. Like it was like a giant Spencer's gift space.
Oh, okay. Do they still sell indie sex and horror comics?
They don't, unfortunately.
Oh, damn it. I just put out one. It's called Detective Demona. She's a succubus that's a private investigator. And at the end of it, her client can't pay the bill, and she's blackmailing her because she finds out her client was involved in the human trafficking ring that she broke up in the middle of the story. And she tells her client that she can pay her in another way, and it's sex. So it's like three or four panels of girl-on-girl action. But the entire comic book, you would never know that's coming because most of the comic is pretty, you know, just action oriented. And then the last three panels or last, you know, like the last two pages are literally two girls, you know, chowing down. And certain stores are like, I don't know how to sell this. And I'm like, but you sell Terra Witch of the Black Rose right there. And you sell whatchamacallit right over there, you know? So I'm always now on the lookout for comic book stores that are like a little bit more open-minded. Cause there's a couple stores that are just like, oh, yeah, we don't sell anything adult anymore because it either didn't sell or it was just bringing in a clientele I don't want in the store. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Really? I there's one I'm trying to keep up with. I think it's called Love Something, but it's about a, like a...
Well, Tim's got that book. What's the one? The sex comic book in space. What's that called?
I have no idea.
Money Shot.
Oh.
Yeah, it's about porn stars that went to outer space and they got stuck in space. They're making porn in space.
Nice.
Yeah. Tim's the writer on it.
Like I said, I'm like way behind. I'm trying to keep up with some of them. My local comic store, I had a folder and they're supposed to contact me every month to come pick up the things I have on subscription. And they stopped contacting me, I think, in October, and I didn't even notice till like recently. So I'm like, kind of mad, kind of like, I get it. But
so you found Hackslash at a sex store, which is, again, hilarious that they would carry comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And you reach right out to Tim to do the cover. Now, you've just been the one cover model for that 15th anniversary issue, right?
I didn't reach out to him. I used to work in a lot of conventions around here, and one of the owners for SuperCon, Mike Broder, wanted to do a photo shoot for him, so he reached out to Tim to see if I could do it.
Uh-huh.
And he said yes. So I flew out to Milwaukee, and we all hung out and did a big old photo shoot, and it was great.
And you got on the, and then that was the photo shoot that we used for the 15th anniversary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there anything that was to be done that you wanted to do differently than what you did, or is that pretty much like how the photo shoot came out?
I liked it a lot. I just wish I had time because it was like spur of the moment that I got hired and asked to do this. I wish I had time to like make the hair look real because it looked very wiggy.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It looked fine in the photos, I remember. I have that cover, I believe. I haven't looked at it in 5 years, though, so my memory's a little foggy about it. But
there's actually two covers.
What was that?
There's two covers.
There's two covers, yeah.
A special edition one, yeah.
With the Image comic characters on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm on the back side.
I was waiting for those Image comic characters to come around to Hackslash for a while, and then it finally happened last year. It was in the I just covered it too. It was called Kill Your Idols, Super Patriot, Shadowhawk, and Bloodshot, Bloodsport, Blood something another show up in it. Maybe not Bloodshot. Bloodsport, yeah, not Bloodshot. Bloodshot's, yeah. Not Vertigo. What's that company called? Valiant. That was the Vin Diesel movie. But yeah, I'm and we've been we just had that Hack Slash miniseries recently, so I'm looking forward to see what's coming soon. But I think there's a new miniseries starting in October. He mentioned to me. Did you have a chance to go back and read all of the prior issues to what you picked up?
Oh yeah, I've been following them for a long time. Like, I'm a huge fan before I was even a cover model. Like, I have all the omnibuses. I've messaged him back and forth. We did a comic and art exchange, so I have a bunch of those, and I even have some of his Batman that I need to catch up on.
When it comes to your content, are you said you're shifting more now into being an actress with these indie horror movies more than just doing the modeling?
So I got into fetish modeling, which has a lot of acting involved, and then I've been doing indie horror for a while, so it's more fun to me to actually act or put a script together. Like, this is pretty ambitious, but I'm hoping to put together a script and get it shot next year of my own.
Oh, wow.
I'll be doing some DA, which is a director's assistant work, probably end of this year, early next year, so I can get some, like, more experience behind the camera.
Are you going to have it, like, independently funded, or are you going to try and fund it yourself?
I'm all indie, independently funded. So whatever I can fill in the gaps with, I will, but... like, I'm pretty sure with the fan base I have out there, I'll be able to help get this film started with a good backing.
Through, like, crowdfunding?
Crowdfunding, yep.
And this will be the first script that you wrote?
This will be the first script I bring to life, yeah. And I haven't really wanted to talk about it, because once you start saying that, people keep bugging you about it, and I'm so busy right now, I don't have the time to, like, get it up. That's why I say next year.
No, I understand. I am currently working on a script with somebody. I'm supposed to be meeting with them at, like, 9 o'clock tonight, actually. I'm hoping they're still as interested as when we first met to kind of collaborate on this. Their input into it online has been, like, hit or miss. It's usually whenever I'm, like, messaging them being, like, are you doing anything with this right now? Because it's like, I'm just kind of doing most of it and just kind of waiting for them to add something to it. So something to talk about tonight, to be like, so where are we in this partnership? Because you don't seem to add anything to this unless I message you.
Yeah. That's the issue. I don't like working with a lot of people because I don't find them as reliable as I am.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. if you gave me a deadline and said, hey, Chris, could you, like, add some pages to this by Friday? I'd be like, sure, by Friday there's the pages. But it's like, I feel like I have to be on top of this person. And it's like, okay, so the real reason for this meeting is to find out how much you're really into wanting to do this or not. Because, I don't see you doing anything unless I message you. So.
Yeah.
I think the idea... Oh, sorry, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
That was my issue with getting a comic book started right outside of high school or college, was the person doing the ink and the drawings for me would just not produce, and I kept coming out with stories and stories, and nothing would get put together. And I was like, okay, I either need to learn how to draw, which is not going to happen.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Or I'm just going to quit this.
I understand that completely. I think with an artist, though, they'll draw it because they want to be paid, so... You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to get paid until it's finished. So that's the one thing I've learned. And like, the next time I do a Kickstarter, you know, I had a really great relationship prior with my artist for Kickstarter, but he's gotten really busy. He's not going to be able to do another one with me for a while. As much as I could, like, you know, like, I don't want to wait another year to do another one. I want to do it next year and have it finished by next year. So whatever artist I get or whatever, I really wanted to have an artist that has that following to be like, okay, so you realize you're going to be paid from the Kickstarter. Most of Kickstarters are usually to pay the people to work on the comic book. The producer is basically using that to fund it. And sometimes people don't quite understand that. It's like, you don't get paid unless this Kickstarter is successful, by the way. So you should make a valiant effort to make, you know, this Kickstarter as successful as you think it can be. And I've seen Kickstarters that just completely fallen apart because, like, the team just was not working on it together. Or it's, like, one person. It's like, the Kickstarter is successful, but it's barely successful. Why? Oh, the artist doesn't promote it. Why? Oh, the artist doesn't speak English. Oh, the artist doesn't feel like they can. The artist is gun shy. They're social media shy. They're this shy. I'm like, wow, get over all that nonsense or hire a new artist.
It's true. Well, like, artists are people. Sometimes you're going to find people who are really great and you work with and you mesh and, like, productive as F.
Yeah.
But that's not always going to happen.
And I think this script that we're developing is like, a really great idea. Here's the thing. It's like, when I looked up how to do, if you're not familiar, I have a comic book called Vlada, A Dracula Tale. There's a comic mm-hmm. book, prose novel, short story collection, things like that. And we gender swapped the cast of Dracula. And for years while we were trying to develop it, you know, I kept looking and nobody was doing it. Nobody is doing it. Nobody was doing it. And we finally launched it in 2020 to print in 2021. And sure enough, nobody still had done it, that kind of thing yet, where we gender swapped the entire cast of Dracula, you know, and it made it kind of like very, you know, independently successful. And it continues to be whenever I can market myself to stores that haven't picked it up yet to do so. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's I think, also a matter of finding something in the market that hasn't been done before. And the same thing with, you know, with film. Don't just constantly keep doing the same thing that's being written. What?
A story that hasn't been written over and over again.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, as much as I despise this entire, you know, I'm sure you've heard of the Pooh-verse, right?
Mm-mm.
Okay, you haven't heard of Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey? The horror movie Winnie the Pooh?
The horror movie, yes.
Yes, this is the Pooh-verse. So it's Winnie mm-hmm. the Pooh, it's Tigger, Piglet. Now there's a movie coming out soon, I'm not even kidding, where they're going to be teaming up their horror Winnie the Pooh, Piglet, Tigger, with their horror version of Pinocchio, Cinderella, Snow White, and Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I saw them crowdfunding for that shit, too.
I was like, what the F is this? First of all, I watched 5 minutes of one of those Winnie the Pooh movies, and they were garbage. I mean, they're also made overseas, so it's not like they're being made here in America with any kind of, like, actual care or interest in art. And the reason why they're being made overseas is because there's no expedition to be made. There's no expedition with the lawyers of Disney to sue them. Ooh. For, yes, they're in public domain, but they're still basically, the lawyers of Disney are still, like, you know, chopping at the bit to sue the hell out of this company to stop them from making it. But they're being made in a country we don't have that kind of, like, legal system expedition to do that, and that's why they're being made in the country they are.
Yeah.
It's no other thing other than, like, oh, we want to get away with, like, ripping Disney off, but the only way to do it is to do it over here.
Yeah.
So it's like, so you're just doing it to piss off Disney? Like, what are you even making anymore? This is like, I go to plenty of film fests and I see plenty of really good movies that are, like, just not getting that type of treatment or that attention, even in independent circles. But this stupid thing is because it's Winnie the Pooh horror story.
Yeah, that's the crowd that loves independent horror. They just love a funny title, funny coincidence. Like, it does not have to be a good movie.
It's not a good movie. It's like, I can't sit here and waste my time watching something like that. And it's just like, why would anybody?
Oh, man. But you would say the same about some films I've been in. But it's for the love of making something so ridiculous or doing the, like, FX for, like... Like, look at all the trauma movies. There's Evil Bong has gone on forever and ever and ever, and that's not a good storyline.
Right.
We love the fact that there's Evil Bong. It's the silliness of it all, honestly.
I mean, if there's a decent story to it, I mean, I will get into it. But again, I tried watching 5 minutes of the Pooh film, and it was just nonsense. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's not to say
a good storyline to any indie horror.
Right. The Cheerleader Sleepover Slaughter has those homages like 80s horror movies that would definitely, like, draw me into something like it. You know what I mean? Now, I admit, though, if the cinematography is terrible, it's hard to watch because you're trying to watch something that, to your eyes, you just cannot focus enough on.
Right, of course.
I saw Murder Size recently. Have you heard of that film?
Yeah.
You're not a fan?
I was supposed to be in it, but...
Sorry to hear that. Yeah. So this is something... Okay. So how often do you audition for things that you... You audition for things... You seem to want to audition for... Like, you said you'll audition... You let me start over. You said you don't turn anything down. But how often do you audition for things that you don't get?
Plenty of times. I don't have a problem with that. That's not why I'm upset. I'm not upset with being turned down. I'm upset with being told I'm in something and then they film it without you in it.
Oh. That... Did you get cut? Yeah. Were you on the editing room floor?
Nope. Oh. Didn't even film it. I just, the thing about being an independent actor, you don't have anybody, you don't have the guild or anything. There are guild actors in these independent movies, but like you have somebody to protect you if you are contracted into something. But if you're not and somebody just decides, oh, I'm going to keep telling you you're in a movie and then you're going to block some time out and we're going to film it without you and then... produce a movie without you.
Oh.
There's no protection from that. Yeah.
Gotcha. But you don't have a problem with,
I've auditioned for a bunch of things that I didn't get, and I'm not upset with that. I just didn't fit the role, or they went with somebody else. That's just the way it is.
Right. And how do you feel when you do film something, but then when you finally watch it, you're not in it, and they tell you you're on the cutting room floor?
I don't mind that at all.
Okay. Are they contracted to tell you that ahead of time, saying, hey, just let you know, we got to cut your entire character arc out of the film because of X, Y, and Z reasons? Most of the time. And how do you feel about that? Or do they not tell you and you find out later on?
They don't tell you.
Oh.
You find out. I've found out at a release of a movie before that I was completely cut out of it. I don't take it personally.
That's good.
Well, there's no reason to.
Do you ever...
But I do understand if it's like your first movie and you're not getting it,
uh-huh,
and you're not getting the IMDb credits. I get that shit.
Have you ever worked with Mel Heflin?
I know her, yeah.
You know her?
We actually modeled together. Mm-hmm.
For David Cross, right?
Don Cross.
Mel does Supernatural Creatures of Lore with me. She's been my co-host on that show since 2018.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
She's doing a voiceover for Helvira, I believe. But we've never worked in a movie together.
You guys should work together. You guys fit the same mold of the kind of films that you both do.
Yeah.
TV...
I knew her before she left Florida, but we just did pinup modeling together, but that's it.
Yeah, she just moved to Florida from, she'd been kind of trapped in Japan for like 5 years, so she finally got out and is in Florida. Yeah, we cover the monsters, mythology, ghosts, and goblins that are fought by Sam and Dean Winchester on the TV series Supernatural.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
I actually never watched that series. I watched a couple episodes, but it wasn't my thing.
Totally fine. We're pretty diehard about it, hence why we do a creature podcast about it, which is... It ebbs and flows. It has its ups and downs. Just because I got kind of supernaturaled out after a while, but the show's been off the air now long enough that I'm just like, whew, okay, this podcast is a little easier to do.
Like nostalgia.
Yeah, you know, it's just I think I mean Supernatural ran for 15 freaking seasons, so you can understand getting like overwhelmed with it. You know what I mean?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, Buffy the Vampire Slayer ran for 7 seasons and a 5-season spinoff show, but it hasn't oversaturated the market. It went away and stayed away, and it's still gone unless you count comic books and books. And the comic books didn't oversaturate the market either. You know what I mean? It's not like Spider-Man being oversaturated every 5 minutes.
Right.
Because they got to keep printing that IP money. You know, Hackslash has never overstayed its welcome. You know, as much as we'd love to see Hackslash happen more often, Tim is insanely busy.
Yeah.
He just had to cancel a store appearance here in Massachusetts because the con he's going to be at, it just wasn't going to be able to work out because he's coming here for Terrific Con in July or August. I forget which month it is. So hopefully I can run into him at that. Yeah, and he's a dad now too. So, and then on top of everything else he's doing. But, you know, and that's one reason why Hackslash just hasn't, you know, happened as much as we've wanted it to. Because it's been a while since we had any new Hackslash until last year. So it's great to see it coming back. But I definitely wouldn't want to see that oversaturated. And I know he's got his, whatever that show is that's coming out soon based on his comic book finally, which is great. But, and there's, you know, the Eisners are next weekend, so they're going to announce the winners of that too, which is great, because Hackslash is up for an Eisner. The first time Hackslash has been up for an Eisner, I think he said it's the first book he's been on that is up for an Eisner, so that will give it more attention as well. But, I do hope it Devrick becomes oversaturated, that we're just to the point we're so overdone with hack slash. You know what I mean?
I agree.
A TV series would be fine, but let's just not over.
TV series would be amazing.
I think a TV series would be so much better than a movie, because a movie, you're gonna have to do it one and done. You're gonna have to do the origin story. You're gonna have to do Vlad's origin story. You know, unless you don't set it up that way.
So much, yeah.
Right, and I think you could set up hack slash, you know, for just Cassie's story being told later on, or if we, what if we just did that one original comic book, that one shot as a movie, euthanized, without getting into the backstory of the two characters too much? That would be fine too, but I just don't think we have that audience today anymore to be like, oh, for over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were guardians of the peace of the Old Republic. I just don't think you can do that as a film today, you know what I mean? Like the way they did back in the 70s and 80s.
I don't think anybody would go to the theaters. Like, we're more into highly produced TV shows now, because we get to stream everything. So, like, a series would be so much better. And we need, like, a new goth TV series. Like, we just lost Shannon Doherty today, I think it was.
Yep.
And I was thinking about it. We don't really have too much in this generation. The 90s, like, took it all with all the goth shows. And, yeah.
I mean, we have Interview with the Vampire, but that show's not very gothic, in my opinion. It's not at all. It's okay. I like that, you know, it's adaptation of the source material, and What We Do in the Shadows is like kind of a joke, but it's meant to be that way. But honestly,
they can't be our goth idols if they're just making a joke of it the whole time.
Right, and Game of Thrones is not goth. It's fantasy. Yes, everyone dresses in leather and it's darkness and everyone's screwing each other's cousins left and right, but that's not goth. It's not fantasy. Cool. We don't have a thing like Xena or Highlander, which, yes, the Highlander was fantasy, but it had this very goth-like aesthetic to it. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's going to go back to vampires at some point, of course, or whatever, but Dexter is like light horror. It's like happy horror. It's kind of the opposite of hack slash in terms of, like, yes, it's a slasher show, but the main killer is the guy you root for. You know, mm-hmm. He's killing bad people, which is what Cassie does.
Evil Dead for a little bit, which is great. But Cassie can have Ash come into the show. Like, that was a thing too in the comic book. So, like, there's so much room for amazing TV show.
I think the TV show would have to, unfortunately, stick to its own characters that they've created for the comic book, and trying to license out Chucky and things like that would just become a logistically complicated mess, unless it's made by the same studio that made the Chucky show, or the same studio that owns
the rights. I think the people who did the Chucky show would be all about it, the way that they keep bringing their own characters back to life, even though they rewrote Chucky. Which I didn't see that one. I got through like maybe 10 minutes of that movie before I shut it off.
I've watched 2 episodes of the TV show and I was just like, this is not for me.
Oh, it's so bad it's good. I swear it turns around. Especially if you're a huge Chucky fan, like the nostalgia of it all is just amazing.
We'll have to see. This is also the 40th, you know, this being the 20th anniversary of Hack Slash, and we're about to run out on the Zoom call. It's also the 40th anniversary of the Nightmare on Elm Street, and there's nothing coming out for that yet, except for there was an announcement that there is a 4K copy of the film, the original film, coming. And everyone's wondering, oh, does that mean the box set's coming right afterwards and you guys are just testing the waters to find out the fan base is still there? And it's like, yeah, possibly. So shut up and buy the 4K film so we can get the box set. Right now, the Craven family owns Nightmare on Elm Street and they're not doing anything with it. They don't want to and they're not taking any offers. So we're going to have to wait and see. Also, you know what? If they didn't ever made another Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street movie again, well, as long as I'm alive, I wouldn't care. I'd be fine. I'd be like, okay, we don't need this oversaturated, ridiculous looking thing pumped out every 5 minutes. You know, it's not scary anymore. And Michael Myers was dragged through the mud and thrown into a meat grinder at the end of his last movie. So I digress.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, where can people find you online if they want to check out your films or follow you on social media?
So you can go to allmylinks.com/sushisavette, and that's sushi with 2 I's. Savette, you'll have to look it up to see how to spell it.
Xhyvette.
Yep.
Okay.
And that will be everything.
Everything
I have will be on that link. Yeah, it's all my links. So all my links.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us about the acting lifestyle and a little bit of your backstory and history and things like that. I'm sure people have been wanting to know who this mysterious girl is all over X and her beautiful, sexy pictures.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. Or, meh, I appreciate it.
No problem.
Cassie, who are you gonna talk tonight? Let the villains know that she's looking for a fight. Hey!